Welcome to the inaugural FinOps podcast with Turnery. And our first guest is J.R. Stormont, Executive Director of the FinOps Foundation. And I also have with me my co-founders, Dr. Kipavarg and Patrick.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
Thanks for...
It's exciting to be the inaugural one. I feel like I'm a lot of pressure on my shoulders here. Better not mess it up. I'm just going to set the bar low for all the other guests.
I think you're probably the best person to inaugurate the podcast. So welcome to the party. And it's been a hell of a ride, I would say. Patrick and I have watched the FinOps Foundation take off. And I don't know how many members there were when we first joined. I think maybe 200 or 300, something like that.
Yeah, I think it was around 200 or 300. And when we did training course, I think it was like 2018 even.
2019.
We were one of the first groups, I think like under 30 people had been certified at that point. FinOps, so it was pretty early.
That's amazing. I didn't actually make it to that course, but yeah, I think that was the first one at the CloudyCon events.
Yeah.
That's right, yeah. We had that with Mike.
Mike Fuller.
Yeah, Mike Fuller, yeah. Right.
Yeah. JR, how many members are there now in the FinOps Foundation?
There are about 4,000, just under 4,000 practitioner members now. So I think when we joined the Linux Foundation last July, there were 1,500. We thought that was a huge number coming from 200 or 300 the year before. So hoping to double or triple it again this coming year. But it's been interesting to see it happen. I mean, there's just been the whole space, I think, has moved out of this early adopter world that I think a lot of us came out of. And in, you know, my past life and working with companies, that was a lot of where they were, into this early majority world where you've got just, you know, bigger and bigger and bigger companies coming over, and now all the GSIs are, you know, running practices in this area. And so yeah, it's really started to move into that mainstream world, which is pretty interesting to watch.
Do you think it's fair to call it default industry framework for solving the cloud budget challenge? I mean, are there any other interesting frameworks out there that people are using?
I don't think we're to the point of being the default framework yet. I don't think there is a default framework yet. I think we have become sort of the ubiquitous community that's like cloud neutral, vendor neutral, where everybody can come regardless of what stage you're in or where you are or what you're doing. But our own framework is very early days, and we're definitely working really closely with a lot of the others who are coming in or building frameworks. Like, you know, Deloitte just joined last week, and you know, I think they've got a bunch of work they're doing. And you know, Google has a bunch of work they're doing, and you know, we just did a bunch of white papers with them around this area. So what we're trying to get to is where we can kind of pull together all those pieces into the central, neutral framework for essentially like building the practice of FinOps. Let the Googles and the AWSs and et cetera tell you how to optimize your individual services in those areas. But you know, we're trying to put together that layer above all that, which is if you need to go and build it, where do you start? What has to be included? And then how do you plug in the right pieces?
Now, it occurs to me, since this is our first episode, that we might have folks who are actually not familiar with FinOps who are listening in. I have my own take, which I'll offer, and maybe Patrick does as well. But JR, what's your best slogan for what FinOps is?
Oh, yeah. So it's funny. One of the guys in the foundation was just saying that our definition sucks. So we're going to overwrite that. So I won't do the long definition of the FinOps. But the short version, which I actually have to credit to Jen Hayes at Fidelity, is FinOps is about getting the most value out of every dollar you spend in cloud. And I always preface that with, now, hold on. It's not about cost optimization. Right? It's not about spending less. It's about spending the right amount, having accountability for spending, because variable spending in cloud, as you know, is all over the place. Power has shifted engineering teams who now need to understand costs and the impacts. Finance teams are no longer able to report in the ways they used to, monthly, quarterly, you know, at this lighter granularity. Procurement has lost power to manage spending. That power has shifted engineering teams, and executives are trying to make better decisions and have more inputs as to where to invest more, where to invest less, et cetera. But largely across the board, what everybody at the enterprise is trying to do is speed up their migrations, right, to cloud in a way that has accountability and visibility. And then ultimately, optimization and reduction of spend in the areas where they want to do less. But it's really about confidence, accountability, visibility into that spend. So to wrap that all up, you know, it's a combination, you know, much like DevOps and all the other disciplines that borrows from, of people, you know, process, technology. It's this cultural shift that includes all those areas.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting to that point. Patrick mentioned the 2018 class that we took. When I walked into it, and I had not heard of FinOps yet, right? And Mike was talking about it. And I looked around the room, and most of the folks there were coming from the finance side of it. And I could tell there were maybe like one or two engineers or something like that. And what I kept hearing in my head when Mike was talking about FinOps was an echo of how I thought about DevOps, right? And I got really excited about it because I could see that FinOps was pulling in threads from Agile and, you know, DevOps as well. And this idea that, let me back up. So DevOps is this notion that if you take two teams that are separately responsible for deploying, you know, a product, and you just put them together on one team, then they have one goal, and then they work together to accomplish it, right? And so in order to do that, you need one organization, and you need to give them guardrails as well, right? Then at the same time, on the FinOps side, we've essentially given FinOps, the developers, the ability to spin up infrastructure whenever they like, right? But we've not given them the corresponding tools. We've not given them the corresponding understanding that they need to be able to do that. It's like someone gave them a Porsche and said, here are the keys, drive it as fast as you want, right? Don't worry about the rules. Don't worry about crashing it into a wall. Just go ahead and drive, right? So what I love about FinOps is the parallel to DevOps and the extension of responsibility from beyond just simply, hey, deploy your own infrastructure to, hey, you're responsible for how efficient your infrastructure is as well.
There's so much in there I want to chime in on and push back on all the things. First, you know, to the point of just the name FinOps, I feel like I always have to say FinOps is a newish name for a practice that's been around for 10 years, right? In some fashion. Call it cloud financial management, cloud cost optimization, cloud cost management, whatever you want. What I love about the FinOps term is very much what, you know, Sasha was highlighting. Looks like we may have lost him there. He's unhappy with that response. As you said, it brings in this aspect that it is like a daily practice that is about accountability, that is shifted down to engineering teams. It's real behavioral change, right, for individuals. It's not like we're going to go and do this sprint of cloud financial management. No, it's we're actually going to change our ways of working and change engineering processes and really develop this complex lexicon in a larger organization. So I think that's, you know, spot on. I mean, I always look back to like the Agile Manifesto and, you know, those principles around working together and continuous improvement and simplicity and changing requirements and all these areas. And it's like, that's what we want to enable in these teams, because this shouldn't be something that is off to the side of the practice. And I think like FinOps or cloud financial management will kind of go away in 10 years because it will just be part of the development process.
And that's exactly what everyone said about DevOps as well. Like it would somehow be embedded into the daily routine of an engineering team. And what I've actually seen over the last 10 years is that, yes, for some organizations it's like that, but a lot of organizations have dedicated DevOps teams. So I really wonder if what we'll end up with is like practitioners who are sort of focused on FinOps or experts in the area. And maybe it becomes part of the day-to-day of the infrastructure team or the infrastructure DevOps team, right? Like it's not clear how it will end up, but there's room and opportunity for it to, you know, move in different ways.
Mike Fuller and Lassian, who's co-authored the book with me on this, he's got a new thing he's pushing, which I think he's spot on, which is the FinOps team does not do FinOps. Like they are there to enable the rest of the organization. And you see early teams have big, you know, central cloud center of excellence teams are doing this work. But when you get to that run scale and it's really further along, you start to be, okay, how do I enable this team to make better decisions? How do I get visibility to this team to be accountable? And that is about, you know, evangelizing the practice, providing the tooling, providing that common lexicon, and stepping back for those teams to take accountability and responsibility.
And so this problem, right, the problem that we're trying to solve with the FinOps framework is so far down in the bowels of the infrastructure ship and the cloud ship, right? Mm-hmm. It's really difficult to explain why this is beneficial, why a company should pursue it when you're talking to a CIO or a CTO. Like, you know, like imagine you're a developer or a director and, you know, it's a very large company and you understand it because you feel the pain yourself. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to explaining it to someone who's like much more high level, who doesn't, they may not have had the perspective of Agile and DevOps in the past, right? They're looking at a more strategic level. How do you suggest FinOps practitioners and folks who are trying to stand up FinOps practices within their company, how do they articulate this problem so that a CTO or a VP or someone super high level can actually hear it?
Yeah, this gets into sort of the why of FinOps. And this is one of the things that we're hearing a lot of trends on right now is how do I help, as we move to that later majority organization, like how do I help the organization understand why I need to invest in this? And it's kind of a dual-edged sword. I think there's the story of, hey, we want to keep guardrails on the spending, like you talked about, so that we don't get surprised. Because most people start the practice, as we've talked about, like at a spend panic moment, right? When things go crazy.
Right.
The other side of that, though, is I think you really want to push that this practice can help enable and encourage innovation, and innovation in the sense of like shipping better stuff that makes me beat my competitors. And it's really hard and scary to do that in a cloud world if you don't have those guardrails in place, because, you know, you spin up whatever it is and you spend millions of dollars and that thing needs to get shut down and you just don't know what's happening, right? So providing the ability to take those big bets and take risks and invest in certain areas and knowing that you have control of the spend, you can allocate it, you know where it's going, and that you can pull it back if you need to, and like basically reducing the cost of failure. Because in on-prem world, like failure is really expensive. You got to buy a bunch of hardware, and if you don't use it, where does that go? So I think that's from the executive level is important message, is that you're both, you know, giving you insights, visibility of what's happening, enabling you to make bets, and then really empowering all the teams to be at the table having a conversation about where to invest. You know, because you take certain companies, they want to double down on their data products where they're, you know, doing personalization and using whatever, you know, big next, you know, upper level service provider offers, and but they want to cut costs on their, you know, staging, wherever it is, you know, non-prod stuff. So it's getting that level of control decision in place.
And how successful have you seen practitioners taking this approach be? Like, is it really an ongoing conversation where they start it with this approach and then they reinforce it over time? Maybe there are certain events that happen within their company where the pain gets expressed because someone overspent and they slowly build a case over time, or is it like a very quick whiz bang thing that you've seen be successful?
Yeah, I kind of think spent a lot of time during COVID at home thinking about all the things. And I started thinking about immune systems and how we react, you know, to a virus and how we have to build up a response. And we have to have certain, you know, playbooks we can run to go deploy a response to that, you know, potential threat. And then we learn from that threat. It's sort of like building that muscle in the organization the same way. I think CFinOps is almost like an immune system, you know, for cloud and organization. And what that means is, you're not born with it. You don't come out of the gate, right, having the culture. And it takes years to develop. And really, like, you're never done, right? Your immune system's not fully baked. Your FinOps practice isn't fully baked. And one of the things we've seen come out of deep diving into the FinOps framework, which is meant to provide this roadmap and give you sort of measures for when you're in crawl, walk, and run, is that no company is ever in crawl, walk, or run. Not only are different teams, and I've been saying this for a long time, teams are different stages, but different parts of your practice are in different phases, right? So you may be really good at forecasting, but you're terrible at remediation of anomalies, right? And so really what we're looking to do is try and provide both a map of what you need to do, but then give you measures of where you sit so that when you're looking at your plan, you can make targets, and goals and targets are really important in this stuff, right? To get to the next level with the recognition that you're really building a muscle, right? And the longer you do it, I mean, take Mike Fuller again, he's been doing this for 7 years at Atlassian, massive scale. He is still at this every day building this practice, right? That it's never really done. And that's not only because it's a culture change, it's also because the cloud is evolving and changing all the time, right? Every time you turn around, there's a new level of billing detail or a new service or a new, you know, whatever to incorporate into there.
And Jared, just one more thing on this topic. In terms of the work that you've seen done over the last year, maybe since you published the book, right, with Mike, and you offered your vision of what you think might work and the stories around it. Like, what sort of innovation have you seen in this space that you would call attention to that FinOps practitioners watching this could read? And are you also planning like another book?
If we can get to it, that would be awesome. We're hoping the framework will kind of lead into that next level. We've got a few ideas on that. You know, innovation is an interesting thing in this space because I think there are a lot of platforms out there, right, who are constantly innovating in this area. And in a lot of ways, there's been an arms race for years, you know, to get the sort of next greatest, best, not only features, but also the best visibility into the data. I think the innovation is really starting to happen with really, again, going back to a cultural bit of how we're starting to see companies now forming teams around this that are happening ideally before you're hitting that spend panic moment, right? And we're starting to see it as sort of, it's becoming a necessity, if you will, where, you know, CIOs are recognizing they need to build the practice early on and finance people are showing up, right, to learn as they go. You know, from an innovation standpoint, you know, technology-wise, I think as a former vendor guy, and I know you guys sell a platform, I think the hard challenge that is still yet to be solved is providing human communication layer between these teams that anybody can put data in front of people about cloud spend. Anybody can show them an anomaly. Anybody can show them a right sizing recommendation. But how do you really contextualize that? How do you actually get the conversation going about it and record that conversation? How do you then like follow up the business impacts of that and make a decision about, do we want to spend the time to do this or not? And get both the voices in there and also get the business case around doing that recorded. And that's where I see, I think, people who have been working this for years are starting to build up that practice in their own companies. And I'm hoping to start seeing the platforms enable that level of communication as well. Because a lot of what we covered in the book was not really the how you do this. It's how do you get the teams speaking the same language and having a conversation.
Right, right. So our specific vision for this, right? And of course, from the start, we've built our platform on top of the FinOps principles. And the way that we've sought to enable this is by adding comment section and assignment of each optimization within our product, right? Because we think that, I mean, of course, we violently agree that more communication between finance, engineering, and all the folks involved on a particular optimization is key for solving it, right? The automation only takes you so far, and we think that that last mile, that whatever, 10% to get things done is all about collaboration. And so that's how we've thought of it for our platform. Have you seen other interesting approaches to solving this problem?
Solving the problem of the communication aspect?
Exactly.
I don't think it's a solved problem. I mean, the simplest basic tool that I've seen be effective is this idea of the mini business case, which is attaching work efforts, outcomes, results to every recommendation, every change, and then having that written and recorded, and then, you know, also recorded into do we do it or not, and which teams are doing that or not, and having that level of tracking to say, not only are we trying to show, get people to take action, like, hey, you should really go do this, but I also want to provide some accountability of what people have done, right, versus what they haven't. Because hopefully you're doing that carrot approach and everybody is a good actor, but sometimes the stick does have to come in, and having that data is helpful.
Makes sense. Very cool.
It's funny, like, if I think back about where this space has gone, I mean, I started in this in like 2011, I guess, and it was all about just what are you spending, right? And then it became like, okay, we know what we're spending, where is it going? And then it was, okay, where can we optimize? And, you know, then it became, well, how do I start to deal with all these, you know, culture bits we're talking about? The thing that I think has confused people the most has been around, you know, are we making the right commitments to cloud providers also? And this showed up in the early days around your reserved instances, which used to be insanely complicated. And then they got a little easier. And then savings plans got easier. GCP did CUDs. But yeah, the story I kept hearing over and over the years was like, I was at reInvent years ago and told like a story of a company who had a bad $2 million buy in RIs because they didn't understand if you bring your own license. They were buying their own RHEL licenses and they bought the, you know, vanilla Linux, and that caused another RIs to be applied. That type of thing is a technology miscommunication. Again, miscommunication between the teams. But where it ultimately got to, I saw, was other companies. And when I was in the UK working with some large retailer, who I won't mention, where they finally did the right analysis to buy the right, it was still RIs at the time, and they were going to buy X, you know, millions of pounds of those things. But it took them 9 months to get approval, first of all, from their finance team to understand it, and then the procurement team to sign off on it, by which time they had already blown through, you know, 3X the money they needed to, those recommendations are no longer valid, they had to start over. So I highlight that story to say that's a communication cultural bit. But the really important thing also is that company took a long time, as everybody does, to get their cycles going fast enough, because this needs just to be like an iterative loop where, okay, we put out those recommendations, 9 months later, they're no longer valid. Is it going to take us 9 months to do it again? Mm. Right. And so that's, I think, really where we're starting to see companies at further stages that they can make mistakes like that. They can start to get the culture change happening, but then they can move quickly through it. We always talk about the inform, optimize, operate cycle, right, and getting quickly through that is really the key.
Right. I have a somewhat saucy topic I wanted to bring up. I wanted to get your take on it. So recently, maybe a couple of weeks ago, 2-3 weeks ago, Andreessen Horowitz published an article where they talked about, number one, they said, hey, everyone, you're not optimizing your cloud spend, right? And you should be doing that. And then number two, they also said or suggested that repatriation from the cloud back to data centers could be a useful thing, right? I'll give you my own take on it, my own saucy take, and then I want to hear what you guys think. So number one, of course, I violently agree optimization makes sense. And I'm so happy that finally, I don't know, a consumer VC has recognized that. And clearly, it's probably because they funded a startup in the area, right? But wonderful that they're here late to the ballgame. And number two, like, given what I understand about DevOps and how complex environments are and how complex migrations are, right? To take a company that is using an infrastructure API that's been developed over the course of, I don't know, in the case of Amazon, maybe 17 years, and then say, hey, we can replicate it on site. Don't worry, right? Repatriate it back on site. And we'll hire all the people that we probably, I don't know, laid off or furloughed or said we didn't need, who can know how to rack and stack and operate a data center. We're going to do all of that on our own. And we're going to
replicate. When it comes in at the data center, yep, it's great.
Yeah, like that seems absolutely insane. Now, I know that for some companies, a small, tiny group of companies whose core business is infrastructure, maybe that makes sense, right? And I think we have seen this picture played out before, like OpenStack, mm-hmm. right? Which was an interesting idea, doomed to failure.
What's happening with OpenStack now?
I don't know, and no one cares. No, I'm just kidding. I know I'm going to get some hate mail for that, but the point is, if you look across the industry, most companies are moving to the cloud because you get a reliable API. You do have the possibility of controlling your cost if you use tools in the space, right? And repatriating simply is a dead end for most companies right off the bat, right? So I know I've been highly opinionated here, and you're welcome to push back, but I'm really curious what you guys think about this.
I think just quickly throwing in, from our experience, Sasha, where we worked previously, trying to reverse engineer the migration out of the cloud based on what we had to do to get into the cloud. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, just looking at the amount of resources that would be used by each of the teams, having to rebuild all those APIs, the technology that's available, the cycles, like we talked about earlier, having to repurchase equipment and go back to these old cycles and 3 to 6 months of procurement. And it's wild that is promoted as a great thing for a number of companies. Like you said, like the Dropboxes and companies whose business is infrastructure, storage, those types of things. I mean, sure, that might make sense, but it seems like a strange thing to promote for the vast majority of companies out there, which, like small startups like ourselves, I wouldn't even want to imagine having to deal with that.
Or anybody who has to compete at all anyway.
Anyone, yeah. Anyone who needs to innovate, right.
So many people reach out to me when that article hit, like, should the FinOps Foundation do a retraction? And I'm like, I really don't want to be in the business of convincing people why cloud is better. Like, cloud is not about cost. Cloud mm-hmm. is not cheaper. I'm the first to say that. Right. Cloud is about faster time to market. It's about access to more resources. It's about moving quickly. Like, Rich Hoyer at SADA he was one of the guys, I got to write something. So he did a great article in this, I think it was in VentureBeat. And he's like, yeah, if you want short-term, like, thinking, that'll give you short-term results, but long-term, you're going to be shooting yourself in the foot, right, with this. And I always think back to, like, when I was selling software in this space, and I'd be standing at summits, and somebody would walk up and be like, "What cloud cost optimization, like, isn't this something that, like, you know, Amazon should do, or Google, like, why are you even here?" And it's like, ah, if you don't know the pain yet, I'm not going to be able to convince you of how hard this problem is, right? And I think, you know, to your point, like, for those companies that are the Dropboxes, yes, that may make sense, because they have massive amounts of storage, but for the rest of us, I don't get it.
Yeah. And I was also thinking to myself, like, if I was in Azure's or Amazon's or GCP's shoes, like, I would see that as a warning sign that, like, I need to get my shit together in terms of, like, giving my own customers the tools that they need or access to a third-party ecosystem that can help them manage their cloud spend. Because if this becomes, like, a rolling wheel and it picks mm-hmm. up speed, I don't think it will. But if it does, then, like, that's going to hurt their profit margin. So I think given that amount of money in play, they have, like, a real incentive to do the right thing on behalf of their customer.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're the ones who potentially have the most to lose here. But at the end of the day, I'm not evangelical about a lot of things, but I'm pretty evangelical that cloud's going to win. And so I feel like I've seen this, like, thing come up every year. There's always some article like this, or there's some CIO who's like, I'm going to pull it all back on-prem. But the other thing that people don't talk about is, well, like you mentioned, like, you need to go hire those people who used to run your data centers. All the best engineers who are working for you want to be operating with the best services that Google's offering, or they want to be using that cutting edge. Right. So, like, you have and I had this happen at a customer years ago where CIO was going to go back on-prem, and the cloud team was like, we will all quit because, like, that's not our future. That's not what we're working on. So,
yeah, I think noise,
and maybe they slow things briefly, but I think the machine marches on.
Yeah. And I think that's absolutely right. In fact, I remember when we were migrating at the last company we were at, Patrick and I, like, one of the principal motivations for developers was, like, they didn't want to do things in an artisanal manner. They wanted that reliable infrastructure API. And I think now that they've had that taste of freedom and control and that growing sense of responsibility, like, I think they'd be very reluctant to go back, because I don't think anyone's built an infrastructure API that can really take care of a business's needs. It's going to have to be an artisanal approach. And maybe companies like Dropbox and Netflix can do that. But I think the vast majority of companies, 99% of them, it doesn't make sense for them to do it. They won't do it, and they're not capable of it. So I think the best messaging there is like, yes, we support Andreessen Horowitz and their article about like optimization as a way forward.
Yes,
for
that's the right message.
Optimization, yes. Repatriation, you're insane.
So on that topic, I mean, looking at optimization, and you know, you all I think are pretty focused on Google. Why Google for you? Like, why are you? I know you had experience there, but I'm curious.
Yeah,
I'm kind of leading into the question of like, what do you think they're doing in this space, and do you think where does it go?
I think so, like for us, it was like you said, we had direct experience of overspending our budget, and we were looking for tools in the space that could help us. And we spent a lot of time talking to companies all across different industries and hearing a similar thing to what we were experiencing, which was there's just nothing for good visibility and especially for optimizations in Google. They have a couple of pass-through optimizations for you, some right-sizing, but it's very limited. And so having had that experience and seeing an opening in the market, we went for a Google first and Google focused approach. We're built on Google. We focus on Google. You know, we partner with Google, and that's our approach. We're all in because we believe that there's a lot of opportunity in that space in the market, given that no one is focusing on it at the moment. The tools that we worked with, they had some basic visibility. The Cloud Console has some visibility, which we'll talk to the Google folks in one of our next episodes about that. But you know, really, we just wanted to provide an equal experience and make Google a first-class citizen in the space for cost management. So that was why we focused on it.
And I think Patrick has the most depth of knowledge in this area because he meets with those teams on a regular basis, right? And he's essentially designing our product. Like, from my perspective, I love the platform, right? Like, it's where we went at scale into the cloud, right? I love the GCP platform, right? I think it gives developers what they need. I think they do it in a more holistic fashion than perhaps AWS, right? Like, they're being, I don't know, let's call it, I don't want to say last to market, but second or third to market, whatever you want to call it. You know, they got to see how AWS developed their cloud. And so they avoided certain mistakes, right? And I think for certain areas, maybe it's changed, but the last I look, like machine learning, GPUs, Kubernetes, I think they maintain the lead. And I think they want the right thing. They've got a fantastic partner ecosystem that they actually care about, right? And so, like, of course, the essential base layer of that Maslow's hierarchy of, you know, why I like Google is it was the platform where we felt our pain and where we wanted to solve it for other customers so they wouldn't experience what we experienced. And then above that is all these other things, like it's a cool platform for partners. They're fun to work with. We feel that energy. Like, it's a fast growing ecosystem as well. So from my perspective, I think that's why we love it. But Patrick has a much far deeper insight into like why we're pursuing it.
Yeah, they've done well with that sort of, you know, how do we augment what others are doing? I mean, they're leaning into that multi-cloud approach, it seems. It's everybody's always got, it's always AWS and Google or Azure and Google. And you get that BigQuery gateway drug and, you know, they get in there and things start to roll.
That's all you need.
I've been working closely the teams as they, Google teams joined the FinOps Foundation, and we've worked on a couple of white papers, as I mentioned. And we're actually considering adjusting the FinOps principles to bring in one of theirs because they riffed on ours and they added, which I love, it's classic Google, they added blamelessness, right, to one of the core principles. And the whole thing there is like every mistake is an opportunity to learn, right? And so let's encourage mistakes, let's encourage that, and let's do evaluations of what happened. And let's share that learning. Right. And I think that's right in that ethos, right, of what FinOps' idea of, like, how do we distribute accountability? How do we get people to experiment, fail faster? I think that's a great approach. And so I'm excited to see them leading in. And they've had, to your point, they've had the advantage of coming in and watching AWS go from invoice to DBR to, you know, DBRRT to curve file to all these things. And they're able to pick and choose. And, you know, CUDs are a great example. I mean, I think we saw AWS moved more in their direction, right, with savings plans, right, because they were able to see what worked and what didn't. So I'm excited to see what they come out with, but also recognize there's some big challenges ahead, like getting down to all that resource level data and what that's going to do to people trying to analyze all this.
Yeah, there's going to be some big challenges over the next 6 to 12 months for sure from the data side.
So JR, you know, every framework has a cultural background that it comes from, right? The idea of responsibility and all this stuff. Do you find that the FinOps framework, the ideas within it, do they have as much impact in other countries and cultures as they do in North America and Europe? Like, are there particular countries where FinOps has been more successful than others? And why is that?
Yeah, I just actually ran the numbers recently. It's so funny you should ask that. It's like we set this up, but we didn't. 37% of our practitioner base is in the Europe or UK. You can't just say EU anymore. I guess they're different. So like there's a huge base there. We're also seeing a really large group. Well, I guess the second biggest was ANZ, right? So a lot in Australia, New Zealand, getting into like Asia Pacific, into Singapore, et cetera. I would say it was like 20-something%, large contingents in Brazil and South America as well. France, for some reason, has been obsessed with FinOps. I think there's like 4 FinOps meetup groups in Paris alone. We actually opened our first official chapter in Paris that we launched a few months back, and we're doing translations now for exams and things. But yeah, it seems to be like fairly universal wherever there is large cloud spend, right? And where I think our group has not gotten as far into is to non-English speaking countries and those using other clouds, right? So we're now part of Linux Foundation. There's an Asia Pacific group there that's helping us look at Tencent and Baidu and all these others as well. And I think that's sort of the next level.
Very cool. Very cool. Patrick, I think we've covered a bunch of topics.
We have.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Jens, always a good conversation.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, JR. It was great talking, and we hope to have you on in the future when the FinOps Foundation is, 10 or 20,000 people to reflect back on this point in time.
Yeah, and I'll have to pull out that interview at some point that Sasha and I did about a year ago when he was still in the practitioner realm as some oldies but some goodies. It's good to be on the other side of the interviewing lens this time. Wow.
Absolutely.
All right, guys.
Well, thanks again,
thanks so much.
And we'll see you soon.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Thanks.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye.